You know, this attack on women in the workplace is directly related to the attack on teachers, a female-dominated profession that we've seen here in Wisconsin and around the country. The Progressive magazine has taken up this issue with our Public School Shakedown Project. And it's a really important issue to defend public education against privatization, and it's related to what Caroline's talking about, with the disrespect and the attack on working women in this female-dominated profession, just like nurses, just like the other caring professions. It's a major political issue, and it affects all of us. When we were starting this project, this education project at the Progressive, is when I first met Tim Slecker, the Dean of Education at Edgewood, who has really been making a lot of waves in Madison, talking about public schools, public education, and what we really want for our kids. Tim is the host of the Busted Pencils radio podcast. He knows all these education bloggers around the country who I've gotten to know through the Public School Shakedown Project. Fantastic writers, many of them, most of them educators themselves. He's a great public school advocate, and he's got a table like a lot of great groups right behind me, and he's selling this t-shirt, which you can go check it out. And it's on the back, it's got this Moment of Zen quote. Civil disobedience is not our problem, Howard Zinn said. Our problem is civil obedience. So to spread that message more widely, please welcome Tim Slecker.
No, that's okay. How's that for a speech? Good. You guys are like, hurry it up and get off quickly. Thank you. The shirts are cool and Busted Pencils is what I do. But I before I introduce our next speaker, I wanted to kind of situate and contextualize that in the way we try to think about this. And in 1999, there was a book written called The Schools Our Children Deserve. It was written by Alfie Cohn, The Schools Our Children Deserve. And that was in 1999. That preceded No Child Left Behind. I won't compete with them. Okay. And in that book, Alfie Cohn, I recommend that you take this out, put forth a vision of public schools for our children. And it's really important how we talk about our children, because most of the relentless attacks on public schools today are coming from people who look at kids as not our children, but as other people's children. And if they're other people's children, then it's acceptable to take care and do the things that they're doing, such as cutting funding, taking away the rights to bargain, you name it. Love it. So we think about that then. What are the schools our kids deserve? And we've been asking that at Edgewood a lot, and we want to push that, and I want you to ask that, because we want to ask our friends or non-friends, or the people that are in charge, in power, who should be the ones that we should be holding accountable for the schools our children deserve, not for the schools that they can barely skimp by and provide for, and in fact, they're starving to death as we move closer and closer towards their identity of privatization. So we have to look at that. What are the schools our kids deserve? How about this, though, too? What are the classrooms our kids deserve? What should they look like? What is the curriculum that should be taught that our children deserve? What are the buses that our children deserve? What are the teachers, which we're doing at Edgewood? What are the teachers our children deserve? What do they look like? What do you want? And also, maybe most important, if it's not most importantly, but for this, what are the leaders that our children deserve, our public school children? What are the leaders? Well, I tell you, I've met one of those leaders. Troy Lorvier and I have met 3 or 4 years ago. He's a principal from Chicago, has moved into a new role. He's here to talk to you about the issues in public education. But Troy is the leader our children deserve. So please welcome Troy Lorvier.
Good morning, beautiful people. My name is Troy Lorvier. I am a Chicago educator. I was born and raised in Chicago. I'm known for being an advocate for public education, but I have to say something. I was not always that. I once sent my son to private school. I once was the principal of a private school. I once put in not one, but two proposals to create charter schools. I was once a finalist for a principal position at a charter school. So I don't come to this work from some ideological position where I picked a side, and based on ideology, that's just where I am. I have shown throughout my history that I'm willing to experiment, to try different things, to see what works. But there comes a time, through that experience, when you begin to see what works. You don't experiment forever. And in the process of trying all those different things, I began to see some things. I began to get an understanding of what works. And more times than not, what worked was what was happening in the public system. So I took my knowledge of what works to Blaine Elementary School in 2011. And I put it to work. And in just a matter of a few years, Blaine became the number one rated elementary neighborhood school in the city of Chicago. And in that process, I began to see that while we were doing what worked, I was working for a city that seemed to be doing the exact opposite. And so I began to get active in political campaigns. I campaigned for Chuy Garcia against Rahm Emanuel. I filmed commercials for Chuy Garcia. I then joined the Bernie Sanders campaign and filmed a couple of commercials for him. And I did, and as a result of a lot of that work, I was removed from my position as principal of Blaine Elementary School just a few months ago. Now, you would think that someone who would go into a place that's not top ranked and bring it to a top ranked status, the mayor and his minions might call us in. What are you doing? Help us understand your secrets. If your goal is to create a good school system, that would be what you would do. But I began as we did our work to improve Blaine, and I began to see what the administration was doing, it became more and more obvious that they might have had another goal in mind. While we were developing systems for teachers to collaborate and learn from one another, this administration was attacking teachers and teacher bashing. While we were focusing on using the resources we had to improve the school we had an administration that built 40% more schools in a district that only had 2% more students. Why are they building so many schools? And then I come to find out that there's a federal government program, just happens to be a federal government program, that allows banks to double their profits from investing in school construction. That the decisions being made by the administration that I was working under had very little to do with investing our dollars into things that improve schools, and everything to do with sending public dollars toward people who already have more money than they can spend in their lifetimes. We used evidence, they used ideology. Evidence helps students. Ideology makes them money. evidence-based practices that we were using and that principals across the city were using were designed to improve instruction. But the ideological-based school reform movement was designed to make money. And so while we're supporting teachers, they're doing teacher evaluation. It's all about accountability. We have to hold those educators accountable. They talk about it like they're instituting these practices that come from the business community. No businessman in his right mind would institute an accountability-based business model. Let me give you an example. If I start a business, I have to have a finance plan and an accountability plan and an accounting plan, right? Financing is how you organize and invest your assets. Accounting is just keeping track of how you've organized and invested them and making sure everything adds up. I don't know a single business in this nation that leads with their, we're going to make a lot of money because we have a great accounting plan. You have to have a great financing plan to make money to account for. And in education, that is what they do, the exact opposite. They lead with accountability. We're going to evaluate these teachers. We're going to watch them. We're going to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do. An accounting plan without a capacity building plan on the other side to build the capacity to do the things that you're expecting them to do in the first place. Who leads? Nobody in their right mind leads with accountability. You lead with capacity building. You lead with professional development. You lead by building structure in the building that builds the capacity of your teams to teach more effectively. That is what we did, but that's not what we were dealing with from City Hall. And so that's what we were dealing with. One of the other things that they began to do was attack teacher pensions, right? That they misspent teacher pension money on the aforementioned school construction. They misspent teacher pension money on $10 million for furniture for their central offices. They misspent teacher pension money on a contract that got our CEO indicted for $23 million. They misspent the money. And now they're saying, well, taxpayers, you guys are going to have to fit the bill. And it's all because of these teacher pensions, trying to turn the taxpayers against the teachers. Now, I have a way with analogies, and I hope this one isn't too inappropriate. But if you have a husband, a spouse, and your spouse skips the mortgage payment in order to buy a fur coat and a sports car for his mistress, and now you're behind on the mortgage payment, like our city is behind on the pension payment because they misspent money. You're now behind on the mortgage payment. You say, baby, you're going to have to work a little harder and expect a little bit less because this mortgage is just getting out of hand. That you're working, you're going to have to work hard because of the mortgage. Now, she may have to work hard. She may have to accept less. But she's not working hard and accepting less to pay for a mortgage. She's working hard and accepting less to pay for the fur coat and the sports car that he bought for his mistress. And our mayor has his metaphorical mistress in Bank of America. He has his metaphorical mistresses in Goldman Sachs, in the Sodexo and Aramark Corporation. That the taxpayer in Chicago is definitely going to have to pony up. But we have to make sure taxpayers know what they're ponying up for. And in the end, the people who are really responsible for it, you could say that it's the politicians that misspent pension money. But that's not really the end of the story. Who is responsible for the teacher pension crisis? Who put the politicians in office? In the end, we have to look at ourselves. Now, I said this to one group of folks in Chicago, and the woman said, well, I didn't vote for him. And I was expecting that. In the end, we are collective responsible. If you didn't vote for him, you didn't do enough to get someone else to vote for the candidate that ran against them. You didn't knock on enough doors. You didn't make enough phone calls. You didn't bring enough people who already didn't agree with you to the table to learn about the issues at hand. In the end, we have to hold ourselves accountable and do better next time. I want to close by saying that, reemphasizing the point that as progressives, we have to hold ourselves accountable. We have to do the on-the-ground organizing that's necessary. You know, there was a time, however, I didn't know that I was a progressive. I didn't know they had a name for what I did and what I believed. I didn't know, I thought I was just trying to do the right thing for kids. I thought I was just trying to spend money responsibly on things that work, that have an evidence base behind them, and not based on some ideology. I didn't know they had a name for that. I didn't know they had a name for people who just give a damn. And that name was progressive. And so I found myself, when I became public, and I found when I became public, all these people calling me a progressive. I said, okay. Now, this is where I get a little critical, folks, and I mean this in love. Have you ever been in a room full of progressives and thought, these are the people on my side? We are in trouble. I'm gonna say from your laughter that you probably experienced that. Sometimes we are too high and mighty, too smart for our own good, and I mean that in a sarcastic way, not literally, that the people who we're organized against, they have a very specific message. They have two or three talking points that they repeat over and over and over again relentlessly, and a lot of times we as progressives and intellectuals, we like to explain everything to people and all the nuanced points, and we have to get to a point where we have our message just as concise and we repeat it just as often and just as relentlessly. One last thing is that all too often we shoot ourselves in the foot as progressives. We often sacrifice the larger victory because we engage in these sub-ideological debates with one another. And we split off into factions that allow the larger issues that we are fighting against to go unaddressed, that prevent us from coming together to form a united front against them. We have to get to the point where we understand that we cannot sacrifice victory in the larger war with the enemy in order to win a battle with our allies. I'm going to say it again. We cannot continue to sacrifice our victory in the larger war against the enemy. The massive accumulation of wealth is the enemy. Those who purvey that's the enemy. We cannot sacrifice that victory in order to win these small ideological battles with our allies. The key tool of the enemy has always been divide and conquer. We cannot continue to divide ourselves and conquer ourselves for our enemy. We must unite. We must stay goal-focused. We must acknowledge our differences. I'm not saying let them go, but let's not make them the basis for divisiveness and splitting off into factions. Let's stay united, stay the course, get our message straight, repeat it relentlessly, and win this war. Thank you.
All right, you can hear more from Troy LaRavier at our education breakout section, and we'll have more details on that. All right, so the breakout sessions are beginning in just a moment. There are two tents. There's a great big tent at the very end of the field back here.
It's pointy. It looks like a circus tent.
And that's where we're having our Getting Out the Vote session. We're talking about what's happening on the ground between now and the election. It is featuring Dana Schultz, Executive Director of Wisconsin Voices, Lamonte Moore with the Wisconsin Student Power Alliance, Aaron Grunze, formerly of the Progressive Magazine, our great colleague Aaron, now with the Wisconsin League of Women Voters. So if you want to talk about getting out the vote, what's happening, go to the very end of the field. On your way there.
And that's tent number one,
tent
by the way.
Number
tent
one.
Number one in the back.
On your way there, you will pass tent number two, just past the scoreboard in the middle of the field towards the wall. That is where you can hear more from Troy LaRavier on our great K-12 education panel, also featuring Tim Slucker, Heather DuBois-Bournain, who coordinates the Wisconsin Public Education Network, and Angelina Cruz, president of the Racine Unified School District, a fantastic leader of a victory in Racine over the attack on public education. I'll be moderating that panel, tent two, just past the scoreboard. So we will see you there in just a moment. Grab some lunch from our great vendors and have a great rest of your day.